The Katra Podcast, Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive.
You know, we have this tendency, I think, with monumental figures from history. We simplify them.
We do. We sand off all the rough edges.
Exactly. We remove the contradictions and, well, we turn them into saints.
Yeah.
And we lose the complex, strategic, sometimes even calculating person underneath the icon.
That's so true. And when we do that, we actually lose the most valuable lessons about leadership. So today we're going to do a critical deep dive into, arguably the greatest icon of the 20th century, Nelson Mandela.
And our guide for this is the really excellent critical biography, Nelson Mandela by Ileka Boehmer.
Right.
So just to be clear, our mission here isn't to just retell the history of apartheid. I think most people know the broad strokes. We're trying to do more of a literary and political deconstruction of the man himself.
Mm.
And Boehmer's central argument is that Mandela wasn't just, you know, a product of history. He was a masterful and conscious architect of his own identity, his own legacy.
A process she calls self-fashioning.
That's the term. He didn't just stumble into becoming a global leader. He actively constructed that persona piece by piece, phase by phase.
Okay, so why is that so important? I mean, if he's this global symbol for peace, why do we need to chip away at that myth?
Because that's how you understand true leadership.
Yeah.
You have to examine the strategic thinking human being beneath the polished myth.
Mm.
This deep dive is really about gaining a critical perspective on him as a deeply political actor.
Someone who used every tool available to him.
Including his own story, his own narrative. It teaches us so much about how power is managed, how symbols are used, and how identity itself can be a political weapon.
To really get that argument, I think we need to understand the author, Ileka Boehmer.
Yes, she's in a really unique position to write this. She's a professor of world literature and English at Oxford, a renowned post-colonial theorist.
So that's key. She's not a traditional political historian, just, you know, counting votes or analyzing economic data.
Exactly. Her background is what lets her dissect how Mandela used language, symbolism, the way he structured his speeches.
Even his clothes, right? The famous Madiba shirts.
Even the shirts. She looks at his life, and especially his autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, as foundational texts. She analyzes their rhetoric, their intent.
But it's not purely academic for her. She was born and raised in South Africa during apartheid.
And that's the combination that makes this so powerful. You have the academic rigor, but also this deep personal understanding of the country's landscape.
So she can be critical without being detached.
Perfectly put. It allows her to move beyond that sort of national reverence and give us a much more complete picture of his political artistry.
So let's try to summarize the book's core idea. It basically challenges the hagiography, the writing of saints' lives.
Yes. It presents Mandela not as this perfect moral figure, but as a brilliant and deeply pragmatic political performer.
And the book traces this self-fashioning across different phases.
It does. It starts with him as the aristocratic Ixhosa boy Rolihlahla. Then he transforms into the fiery, sharp-suited lawyer in Johannesburg.
Then the Black Pimpernel, right, leading the armed struggle.
Yes, and then that's followed by the long, disciplined transformation in prison, where he becomes this elder statesman. And finally, of course, the president and icon of reconciliation.
That's a huge evolution for one person.
It is. And Boehmer shows that at every single stage, he was consciously adapting his identity, his tactics. His ideology broadens from a kind of narrow nationalism to a much more inclusive humanism.
But you're saying this wasn't just personal growth, it was strategic.
It was always strategic.
And that leads to this interesting idea in the book that the international movement turned him into an empty signifier. What exactly does that mean?
An empty signifier is basically a symbol that's so powerful and so broad that everyone can project their own hopes onto it.
Like a blank canvas.
A perfect blank canvas. Because he was imprisoned and silent for so long, he became this untarnished symbol of the anti-apartheid struggle globally.
Which was a huge asset, I'd imagine.
A massive asset.
Yeah.
But also a burden, because it meant the real man, the politician who had to make messy, difficult compromises later on, would always struggle to live up to the impossible myth that was created for him.
Okay, let's go deeper into that strategic evolution, phase by phase. Let's start with the foundation. His aristocratic Thembu upbringing. How did that shape him?
It was, absolutely foundational. It gave him what Boehmer calls a regal bearing, a natural sense of destiny.
So it wasn't just a personality trait.
No, it gave him an inherent authority, a confidence that set him apart from many of his peers who were forged in, you know, the chaos of urban protest. He started with this baseline of gravitas.
And that gravitas must have just collided with the reality of Johannesburg. That must have forced his first big reinvention.
A huge reinvention. He had to shed that sort of country boy identity and actively craft the persona of the modern, defiant, sharp-suited lawyer.
The co-founder of the ANC Youth League.
Right. Pushing that older generation towards mass action. It was a very conscious move.
For a lot of us who only know him as the peace icon, that next pivot, like the turn to arms struggle, can be really jarring.
It is, but Bomer emphasizes that the decision to co-found Umkhonto Wesizwe Siswe, or MK, was deeply pragmatic. It wasn't an emotional outburst.
This was after the Sharpeville massacre in 1960.
Exactly. Decades of nonviolent protest had been met with just brutal state violence. So for Mandela, the strategist, the environment demanded a new tool. It was a calculated adaptation.
And that pragmatism leads to what might be his ultimate performance. The Rivonia trial speech in 1964.
Oh, political masterclass.
Yeah.
She treats that speech, "I am prepared to die," as this incredible rhetorical text. It wasn't just for the judge, it was for history, for the world.
And the key move was balancing his claims, right?
Yeah, that was the genius of it. Claiming to fight both white domination and black domination. That single line immediately positioned him as a principled, non-racial visionary. It set the moral high ground for the global movement for decades to come.
Then comes the crucible, Robben Island. You said it wasn't passive suffering, it was active preparation.
Yes, a conscious, deliberate transformation. Mm-hmm. He used that isolation for intense self-education. He was turning himself from a fiery revolutionary into a disciplined statesman.
He was rehearsing for the presidency.
He was running mental simulations for 27 years. He wasn't just surviving, he was preparing.
And the most famous example of this is the strategic empathy, learning Afrikaans, studying the history of the Afrikaner people.
Mm.
But hold on, wouldn't that have been seen as a huge compromise by his comrades suffering right alongside him?
And that's the exact tension Bomer explores. For some, sure, it looked like fraternizing with the enemy, but for Mandela, it was pure strategy.
Know your enemy.
Know your enemy's culture, their history, their deepest fears. He knew that was the only way he could successfully negotiate with them one day. It showed a patience and a long-term vision that was just beyond the daily politics of the prison yard.
So let's fast forward. He's released, he's president, and Bomer points to his risk-taking, his pragmatism in starting secret talks with the government in the late 80s.
Yes, and without the full consent of the ANC.
That's a huge risk.
It shows his supreme confidence in his own strategic vision. He knew he was the only one who could bridge that gap. And then once he's released, you see it in his iconic gestures, wearing the Springbok rugby jersey, for instance. That wasn't just a nice thing to do.
It was a deliberate political performance.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Designed to heal a deeply, deeply fractured nation. But this is where Bomer lands her sharpest critique.
Okay.
While he was a genius at symbolic reconciliation, through things like the TRC, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Right, which offered amnesty for testimony about apartheid crimes.
Yes. She argues that this symbolic victory may have come at the cost of substantive economic justice.
This is the point that often gets glossed over. You're talking about the economic compromises of his presidency.
Yes. Specifically, the adoption of a policy called gear growth, employment, and redistribution. It was, in essence, a market-friendly neoliberal policy.
Which would have contradicted some of the ANC's earlier, more socialist goals. Things like radical land redistribution.
That's the strategic trade-off. To achieve political freedom and stabilize the economy, he had to make an economic compromise. And that compromise left the deep structural economic inequalities, the real legacy of apartheid, largely in place for the black majority.
So understanding that calculation, that choice, makes the whole story much more complex.
It makes the icon a real pressured politician. And in my view, even more remarkable for it.
So what are the big themes we should be taking away from this portrait of Mandela the architect?
Well, the first is the one we started with, the art of self-fashioning.
Right, the idea that identity isn't fixed. And maybe the lesson for us is to use periods of difficulty, you know, a personal setback or a professional one, for that same kind of deep self-reflection and education that Mandela used in prison.
Yes, that we can consciously shape the future version of ourselves. The second theme is what we called strategic empathy.
Learning Afrikaans.
That decision is such a powerful lesson in any negotiation, business or otherwise. Understanding your counterpart's fears, their culture, their red lines, it's a massive strategic advantage that lets you build bridges.
And the third theme, which ties everything together, is pragmatism over dogma.
I think his true greatness was in his flexibility. He wasn't rigid. He pivoted when the situation demanded it, from nonviolence to armed struggle to negotiation.
But the ultimate goal always stayed the same.
The goal of a non-racial democracy was constant. That adaptability, that's the mark of real strategic leadership.
Let's talk about some of his words. Bomer treats his quotes less as beliefs and more as carefully constructed texts. That iconic line from the Rivonia trial, "I am prepared to die."
As we touched on, she sees that as a foundational text. The strategic genius was in what came next. The promise to fight both white domination and black domination. That non-racial vision was essential. It turned a local fight into a global crusade.
What about the one from Long Walk to Freedom? To be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others.
That's the final perfected statesman persona speaking. It's the articulation of his reconciliation project. It shifts the focus from liberation, from something which is confrontational, to the responsibilities of freedom, which is collaborative.
It's a message designed to calm fears.
Exactly. To calm the white minority and guide the new nation.
And finally, that paraphrased idea that reveals the thinking behind the turn to violence. Our struggle has reached a stage where we must be prepared to consider any instrument.
That reveals the political scientist in him. It wasn't a moral failure. It was an acknowledgement that nonviolent had reached its strategic limit against a brutal state. It shows he was willing to change the tool if the old one was broken.
So what's a real-life application here for us? I'm thinking of that ability to take the long, disciplined view.
Yes, that's a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
We are so focused on immediate results. But his example, spending almost 3 decades in active preparation, it teaches patience.
And the capacity to think in decades, not just quarters.
Right. Sometimes you have to make tough, unpopular, short-term decisions, like the gear policy, for the long-term health of your organization or your nation. You have to endure some pain for the long-term gain.
And the final takeaway, I think, based on Bomer's whole approach, is the importance of deconstructing our icons.
It's just a vital skill for anyone who wants to be an engaged citizen. She teaches us to look past the media myths and ask deeper questions about all public figures.
What were their real motivations? What compromises did they have to make?
What was the real cost of their leadership? Analyzing the strategy is how you find the real story.
For me, the most fascinating part of all this was realizing that the man who walked out of prison was, in so many ways, the man he chose to become while he was inside.
Mm-hmm.
That idea of active rehearsal, of a strategic vision held over 27 years, it's almost unbelievable.
And that really brings us to the final thought. The true complex greatness of Nelson Mandela, as Bomer shows us, isn't diminished by seeing his strategies and compromises. If anything, it's enhanced.
Right.
Understanding the shrewd, disciplined politician who consciously built himself into that icon makes his achievement of transforming a nation even more remarkable. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.